Good evening and welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is the InfoWars Nightly News. I'm your host, Aaron Dykes. Today is Monday, November 5th, 2012, just before the elections.
Tonight, Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaefer drops a bombshell on Benghazi Gate just one night before the 2012 presidential election. Plus, Hurricane Sandy is turning into Katrina 2.0. And Aaron Dykes previews the InfoWars special election coverage. That's coming up next, the InfoWars Nightly News.
After the flood comes the freeze. There is new news about the northeastern storm expected to hit New Jersey and New York in the wake of Sandy, as the aftermath has already been very chaotic, a very inappropriate response from FEMA, as at least 40,000 people are without shelter, without homes at the moment, particularly tens of thousands of public housing people who may be freezing in weather that may dip as low as the 20s. It may also bring more flooding, more freezing, and more destruction, perhaps even a bigger FEMA response. This is in Zero Hedge. It's also been reported in the New York Times, in Reuters, in CBS, and other mainstream blogs about the potential effect of the new storm expected to hit Wednesday after the elections in the areas most hard hit by Hurricane Sandy. Something to keep an eye on as we look to the fact that Sandy is now on folding into a Katrina 2.0. Melissa Melton has that story, rounding up all the news in the wake of that terrible storm that hit the Atlantic eastern coast. You've got the New York Times and the fact that they celebrated immediately after the hurricane hit how great FEMA was, how they were coming to the rescue, and yet we find in Breitbart, other outlets, how FEMA failed to even plan ahead for the basics of food and water. They ran out of water. That was on Drudge Report and other sites yesterday. It's not expected to arrive until today. They weren't able to distribute bottled water. They also didn't even do purchasing for food for the displaced residents in New York and New Jersey until Friday, when the bid closed on November 2nd, despite the fact they had 4, 5, maybe even 6 days where they knew the direction of the storm. It was completely accurate where they predicted it was going to hit. It actually hit, but they didn't plan ahead. Why? Because FEMA is the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Why didn't they plan ahead when it's their job, their critical mission, their mandate to protect the people most affected by this flooding? You've got gas shortages, fuel shortages. They're unable to heat things. And you've got people diving in dumpsters trying to find food when FEMA, of all their roles, is supposed to be there to at least meet those basic needs. They didn't do it. Didn't they learn their lesson from Katrina, where we saw thousands and thousands of people without homes, thrown into that terrible Superdome, which became a crime and cesspit? You had police on the bridges shooting people for trying to walk off the bridge and escape. You had the gun confiscations and everything else. Is that where the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy is heading? Well, we'll find out. But Melissa Melton also points out how FEMA's actual funding through congressional investigations and the Cox Newspaper Group study, they found that back in 1992 numbers, only about $243 million of FEMA's budget went to actual disaster relief, while almost $3 billion went to black ops. We've covered this extensively here at InfoWars.com, how FEMA's real mission and Homeland Security's real mission is to build up the continuity of government systems, how to keep an illegitimate form of government going if they decide that the constitutional form of government can't survive because of any kind of disaster, natural disaster, man-made terrorism, fallout from civil unrest, if there's a big economic collapse, you name it. That's what that federal family is really here for. They're not here to take care of you in a disaster, so you'd better make plans to take care of yourself. That's why, of course, people have argued to return that duty, which was traditionally held by local communities and, in some instances, states, back to the local scene and to private agencies who've been again and again and again hampered by FEMA's response. They keep volunteers away from the scene of disaster. They've even even kept out the Red Cross, you name it. You've got people like Rudy Giuliani saying FEMA is as bad here in Sandy as they were in Katrina, although it's very limited comments, clearly just meant for this election cycle. I'm sure he would have done the same were he in power. That brings us to the election. It's still unclear what's going to happen with the vote in New Jersey and New York, but they're not swing states, so they probably won't affect the actual presidential decisions. But you heard Alex on with Bev Harris of blackboxvoting.org, one of the experts on election fraud, talking about how under the Help America Vote Act, they are required by law to have a disaster relief plan should they get hit by a storm, as happened, should they lose electricity, as has happened. And it's not clear that those things are happening, that those measures have been put into place, even though you see the military there with backup units to take the vote. Well, we're going to see what happens when all is said and done, because there may well be cases of fraud in close House, Senate races, other local races, something to keep an eye on. But the overall national election coverage is going to be bigger and better than ever this year in this very tight race. Infowars.com is doing live election coverage. Of course, Alex will have his regular show during the day's broadcast. We will still do the Infowars nightly news, but we're going to have a special free live stream broadcast from 5 p.m. Central to midnight Central, and we're going to have all kinds of guests outside of the regular left-right paradigm. When you turn on CNN, when you turn on Fox, and they call these races with 1% in, with just a few percentage ins, and they've got the typical pundits on either side of the fence, but never anywhere else in the spectrum, calling it like it supposedly is. Well, this is the real analysis you've been waiting for. It's people like Gerald Celente, people like Max Kaiser, Wayne Mattson, Paul Craig Roberts, Lou Rockwell, who says in some cases don't even vote for president, Nomi Prinz, who worked inside Wall Street and was a whistleblower, and of course Webster Tarpley, who always brings a very unique perspective to the debate. You don't want to miss that. Alex will of course be there. We're also going to have our mini InfoWars nightly news reporters out on the scene talking to regular folks in the streets. I believe we're going to be at some of the campaign events, and we're going to bring you total coverage, so you don't want to miss that. Meanwhile, the threats to riot from Obama supporters should Romney win the White House have reached a crescendo. Paul Joseph Watson cataloged some of the dozens and dozens of threat on Twitter and other social media platforms that were rolling in per hour of people saying they're going to riot, people saying if Romney wins, we're going to go out on the streets and riot. You've got different quotes there. Me and Future are going to start a riot. Romney wins, every struggling college student minds will mount up, time to riot. If President Obama is reelected, rednecks will burn crosses. If Romney wins, expletives will riot. And it goes on and on. There's all kinds of quotes, many of them not even literate, but there is a real danger here. And I heard Alex's take on this. I happen to agree with it. There may not be rioting if it's a clear-cut election, if one candidate or another clearly wins with a mandate. But we've got such an incredibly close election here, particularly in Ohio, which we're going to get to momentarily. That could be what triggers the pitting of groups against each other. That could be what triggers riots if Romney's declared a winner, but it's not clear cut. If no one is settled on the outcome in Ohio or any other key swing state, that may be what puts people over the edge. Let's certainly hope not. You shouldn't riot over that, because presidents don't even hold the real power. When President Harry Truman said the buck stops here, that was at a point in time where the continuity of government and the power of agencies behind the president was so great that it was literally a farcical and inverted statement. Folks, we're not voting for who's really in power of this country. We've got an entire corporate-controlled takeover, and we've got to begin to look at those issues bit by bit, not get into this horse race of Obama, Romney, Bush, Kerry, Gore, Bush, on and on, McCain, Obama, and everyone else we've been faced with in recent years. So with that in mind, I bring you to the latest polls on the Mitt Romney Obama showdown. You've got Rasmussen from Today, Mitt Romney 49%, Obama 48%. Well within the margin of error. I know we have these stories pulled up on the tabs there. The Reuters poll shows the race is dead even in terms of the popular vote, but says Obama is, quote, crushing Mitt Romney in the Electoral College. You've got the Examiner.com showing how close the polls are in Ohio between Obama and Romney. They cite multiple new polls and analyze them. You've got Rasmussen Rasmussen's own latest poll in Ohio, what many people consider to be the key swing state in this election, and it is incredibly dead even. Romney 49%, Obama 49%. Just going off the voting from these polls, which of course only survey about 1,000 to 1,500 people at a time, you really can't call it. It is too close to call. That doesn't mean there's not other factors involved. Policy Mike is showing that in the Ohio polls, Gary Johnson, the Libertarian third party candidate, who many people don't think will get more than 1%, could be an X factor no one's talking about in Ohio. Even if he only gets 1%, that could be enough to swing it to Obama, presuming that many Libertarian supporters may come from the Republican side. I don't know if that's true because so many people are disaffected and refusing to vote for either party. But regardless, this is going to be a very tense vote. And yet we are told from NPR.org, National Public Radio, many other outlets that don't worry about the vote in Ohio. There's not going to be voting fraud. No, Romney's son is not gunning to steal the Ohio vote by rigging the machines. And of course, it came out last week and in earlier weeks how Tag Romney, Mitt Romney's oldest son, has stock in the company Solimer Capital, which is in turn invested in the Higg Fund, which is in turn invested in Hart InterCivics, who control the electronic voting machines in Ohio. And they're saying, well, there's no meaningful connection to the Romney family, but even if there were, it wouldn't matter. And so, of course, Bev Harris, again from blackboxvoting.org, who was on the Alex Jones show today, pointed out that these various holding companies connected to owning the Hart InterCivics machines are essentially just a Bain Capital spinoff group, and there's no reason to trust them. There's especially no reason to blindly trust them. We have to investigate this regardless of what party is in power. Look back to the 1960 elections. They've been stealing and rigging elections since the dawn of time, since before they had democracy, I would have to imagine. If you accept the pun anyway. But in 1960, JFK versus Nixon, they were both admittedly stealing the vote, doing all they could to ballot stuff and getting mafia groups involved. But JFK was just stealing a little bit better. That's why he became president. And, well, you see what happened to him. No, necessarily not connected to the election itself. But the point is we can't accept these machines. We can't trust them when we know how easily they could be hacked. Bev Harris knows that better than anyone. She did the documentary on hacking democracy, the books and the materials and the website that goes with it, years and years of investigating. And yet you've got a county election official in Hamilton County, a Sally Krizzle, saying if somebody was going to do something funny, believe me, everybody would know. And she's essentially offended that they can't trust these machines. And Hart InterCivics has a long track record of supporting, quote, fair and open democratic processes. That's from a spokesman for the company, Charles Simpkins. And they're saying there's just no reason not to trust these machines. They switched to paper ballots. How dare you? How could you? Oh, really? The paper ballot systems from Hart InterCivics, the e-scan systems? Well, what happened with them, of course, originated after the very contentious 2004 election between Bush and Kerry, where the vote was hacked. It was essentially proven that in Ohio, you had various officials from Diebold, you name it, saying they were going to hand the election to Bush. He won it. That, in fact, was critical to the election. You better believe the machines played a role. So they switched, and yet they found in 2007 that these Hart InterCivics machines, in particular the e-scan and ballot now machines, while using paper ballots, could not accurately count the ballots, and therefore they failed to receive certification even where many electronic voting machines were certified. And the bottom line is, even if they were certified, anyone on the inside of the election systems could very easily manipulate it. All you need is essentially just a card you put into the machines, and it's very easy to flip it. There's no real way to account for those paper ballots, although it's certainly more reassuring on the surface. Now, that's people alleging that Republicans were going to steal it. In this case, it was the Colorado Secretary of State, Michael Kaufman, who did the testing and recertification in 2007. In 2010, it was alleged that that Democrats would use the very same Hart Intercivics machines to try to steal the election for the Democrats so they could take over the House for the Obama-related people in 2010. And that also gets into the Hart e-scanning voting machines and how they violate constitutional rights, how they conceal the essential counting process from the public, how they could be easily manipulated with anyone with inside access, and how the tally software that adds up the votes from the precincts cannot be verified. Ohio Secretary of State's office admits direct reporting function of untested election software. This is in Truth Out, and they are talking about Ohio's Secretary of State, John Husted. He is, in fact, a Republican, which could be telling with all these Bain Capital connections to the machines. He has installed only days ago uncertified and untested software on up to 39 counties in the state. This will affect as many as 4 million votes in the state. It's part of a pilot project they're doing with 25 counties or so. Again, actually, it's 39 counties. So it's not statewide, but it is a pilot project they're doing during a live election in what is considered to be the critical swing state. Just absolutely incredible. Should not sit well with anyone, no, regardless of what side of the political spectrum you're on. The freepress.org has been very heavily on this issue, actually reporting on it even before Truthdig, asking why the Ohio Secretary of State, John Husted, put in this experimental software. It ties in with the Triad Computer Systems, who do the maintenance, and with the ES&S voting machine company, also involved in the maintenance, and they have put in software patches, the very thing that Bev Harris Warren has used to hack these machines, and that other people investigating these machines have flagged. It's presumably illegal, again, untested, because it hasn't been certified, and yet it will be used to tabulate these official results, and those results will go directly to the Secretary of State's office. That's the only live reporting they do back. Again, the verification is very questionable. So a lawsuit has been filed over this issue of the experimental software by the Ohio Green Party and by freepress.org, in particular, Bob Fitrakis, who's the editor there. And so whatever happens in Ohio, the deal will not be done because there's a lawsuit in over these electronic voting machines that use paper ballots but which are electronically scanned and counted. So no matter what, there's going to be some fallout over this. I think it's probably going to be a while before we know for sure what happened in Ohio, but we'll see what people say. And there's one more issue that Ohio Secretary of State is involved in that he implemented just 4 days before the election, and that is their new policy on the provisional ballots. Of course, in Ohio, if you request an absentee ballot but then show up to the actual polling place to vote, you must cast a provisional ballot, and there's all kinds of fracas and controversy over under what circumstances they count. If you fill it out wrong, is it up to the ballot person to make those corrections or up to the voter? If you send it in through mail but also file a provisional ballot, what happens? A lot of balls in the air, and there's at least 800,000 absentee ballots that have not been sent out, have not been filled in, and therefore you could have as many as 800,000 provisional ballots. Just incredible what might happen in Ohio, what could happen in other places throughout the country as well. Let's all keep an eye on this election while keeping in mind it's a two-party dictatorship, and not much is going to change regardless of who's elected, apart from the fact that I think they really like two-term presidents because of the unchecked power you could carry out. You could do all manner of ill deeds that way. So there's so much up in the air about this election. You've seen various bookies and casinos calling it for Obama. A few people have called it for Romney as well. But who has the real insight? Alex Jones filed this special report, and he's calling the shots on this election. Here it is.
Well, the results are in, ladies and gentlemen. Mitt Romney has been elected by the popular vote and by the Electoral College, the 45th president of the United States. But we hear that sound of the needle coming off the record, don't we? Because he hasn't been elected president of the great United States yet. And it would be wrong if people were saying that he was a shoe-in and couldn't be defeated. It would even be more wrong if big betting services in Ireland, England, and other areas were already paying out this weekend bets to people that had made bets saying that Barack Obama was going to win. Now, I ignored that when I saw that news yesterday, but then I began to see all these other headlines, how there was an 80-plus percent chance Obama was going to win in the New York Times with a Democratic Party-connected polling agency, when all of the wide-spectrum polls, we're talking about Harris, Gallup, the list goes on, show in national polls that Mitt Romney is 3 to 5 points ahead of Obama. In every single poll out there, he is beating him. In every major battleground state, Mitt Romney is tied or ahead. We're talking about Minnesota. We're talking about Ohio. We're talking about Colorado. The list goes on and on. These are traditional states that go Democratic. Now, understand something. I'm not a big fan of Mitt Romney, and I've not been out there promoting him. But whenever I see Obama using hurricane press conferences to electioneer, whenever I see the media trying to use the aftermath of Sandy that FEMA's done a terrible job on, trying to say that he's a hero, whenever I see dirty tricks like this where the betting houses, not just overseas but even in Vegas, are saying 2-1, 3-1 for Obama, when all of the historic facts and polls show the opposite, it looks like they're getting the public ready to steal the election. It's the oldest trick in the book. When they know they're going to steal an election, they try to create a bandwagon effect where people hear that there's no way Obama can lose, so they don't go to the polls. And so when they cheat in key swing states, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, and people say, well, that's it. You know, Obama had such a lead, when he does not have a lead in any national poll for the popular vote, and when he does not have a lead in most of the Electoral College swing states, because it will be the Electoral College that decides this. We've got major university polls out, like the University of Colorado, that for the last, 4 or 5 elections has been 100% on target. They're saying 70-plus percent chance that not only will Mitt Romney win the national overall vote, but there's a good chance he's going to win the Electoral College. So let's be clear about this. I am seeing TV reports on the news, hearing it on the radio, reading it in the newspaper that, oh, the bookies in Vegas, the bookies in Ireland, the bookies over in England, they're all saying Obama's going to win. There's no way he can lose. In fact, here's one of the headlines here out of Business Insider. Irish betting site calls race early, pays out Obama victory, bets 2 days early. Here's another one out of the Business Insider. Nat Silver, that's the New York Times polling company. Obama's odds of winning have now hit 85%. Here's another one. Jim Cramer, Obama is going to obliterate Romney in a historic landslide. And then you look at the polls, you look at the Electoral College, everything is pointing towards a Romney landslide. But remember, in the age of electronic voting fraud, of black box voting, which is designed to be able to manipulate votes and cover the fact up, it doesn't matter who casts the ballots, it matters who counts them, as Joseph Stalin, dictator of Russia, once said. In the 2008 election, we saw $3 billion spent by the campaigns, but also by soft money. The New York Times is now estimating $6 billion is being spent this time. Now, do you think that Vegas and the other big gambling systems, do you think they might be in there trying to manipulate things? Since when do we, here in the United States, let the famously seedy betting houses and gambling houses of the world tell us who's going to win? In closing, here is why I'm so concerned about Obama. Yes, Mitt Romney's a globalist, but he will be facing re-election if he gets elected. And he will have a lot of people in the Republican Party who are pro-Second Amendment and anti-abortion and pro-national sovereignty in there to try to keep him on the straight and narrow. If Obama gets back in, the same crew that ran Fast and Furious to blame the Second Amendment, if they get back in, he's not facing re-election. He has executive orders that he's shown he'll use to circumvent Congress and the will of the people and the Constitution. And he will also have the power of the pardon, not facing re-election. All I want is to have a fair, real election in this country. And I see the mainstream, prostitute, corporate media getting everybody ready for an Obama landslide when all of the polls and the facts show the opposite. Mitt Romney has not been elected the 45th president. And Obama has not been elected as the 44th president to a second term yet. And so it's wrong for the media to be selling that hoax and that idea. Please get this video out to everyone you know. We'll be covering this right through the election and after the election. If there's any civil unrest or other crises that arise, at InfoWars.com and PrisonPlanet.com and on my syndicated radio transmission, 12 noon to 3 p.m. Eastern, find stations and affiliates and free audio streams as well as the podcast again at InfoWars.com.
Now, if the government hacking elections hasn't been enough hacking for you, we can also cover Anonymous, who have announced their attacks on various websites today, November 5th, in honor of Guy Fawkes Day, that Anonymous mask that they adopted several years ago, as well as their quoted plans to storm the White House and, quote, arrest government officials the day before the presidential election. That's from reports Paul Joseph Watson did, and this story by Kurt Nimmo. And so the hacker collective Anonymous claims it has released confidential consumer information that it stole from PayPal servers today, as well as from various other sites, including NBC, Lady Gaga's fan site hosted at NBC, Image Shack, Symantec, who's a computer security firm, and the Australian government. And that includes phone numbers, emails, domains, passwords, usernames, maybe even credit cards. We'll find out a lot of nasty business going on right around this time of year. In the surveillance state news, we can turn to Baltimore, who have announced a citywide surveillance rollout that records passenger conversations on city buses. Can you believe the audacity? This is up at thedrudgereport.com. It's, of course, on InfoWars.com, and it comes from naturalnews.com, where J.D. Hayes wrote that it was published how in Baltimore, city officials are authorizing the recording of private conversations on public buses to investigate crimes, accidents, and poor customer service. It's all in the effort to make people feel safe, they say. More and more security for your safety. What did Benjamin Franklin say about this? He said if you trade your liberties for the feeling of security and safety, you're going to end up with neither. That's what's going to happen here. But, of course, we know that it's all part of the larger rollout for TSA, for Homeland Security to take over all transportation, to go to shopping centers, to go to malls. They're already at some sports stadiums to take over all of public life to let you know you're under surveillance, you're being watched. You may be considered a terrorist if you say something out of line. And that will, of course, include public buses. It's just crazy unconstitutional. The ACLU has raised questions about it. But for the moment it stands, will anyone say no? We'll find out. And with more on the nanny state and how much it's taking over our society, we turn to a report Jakari Jackson filed, Eat It, America. Why are they telling you what to eat, when to eat it, and how much? Well, you'll find out in this report.
I'm Jakari Jackson with the InfoWars Nightly News. Now, it's no secret that America is overweight, but isn't it your right as an American to be as fat as you want to be, or as healthy or skinny or anything else? Well, the government doesn't think so. Let's start with Mayor Bloomberg. Washington, D.C. is ready to follow New York's example as they plan to ban large soft drinks. Not only is this completely ridiculous and very much unconstitutional, it doesn't even take an account for diet soft drinks, which can actually be worse for you because of aspartame.
You cannot go to the grocery store now and buy any type of even regular sugar gum that hasn't had aspartame added to it.
A long-term study found that those who drink just one can of diet soda a day have a 42% increased chance of leukemia as well as other health factors. Michelle Obama is also concerned about health, particularly when it comes to the nation's youth. The First Lady launched a campaign to count the calories of the nation's school children.
Starting this year, the talented people who cook the food at your school will be offering you all kinds of healthy, delicious new choices. These healthy foods are good for your body. They'll give you energy and make you stronger.
The problem with this policy is that it is a one-size-fits-all endeavor. It doesn't take into account the needs of athletes and other students who are just generally more hungry than their classmates, as demonstrated in this video by a Kansas high school. If we can stay in the lunchroom for one moment longer, a school in Chicago has banned home-packed lunches, denying parents and even the students themselves the right to eat whatever they seem fit. Meanwhile, several Chicago schools have earned a failing grade in the cafeteria.
Since 2011, 244 of Chicago's 681 public schools failed at least one inspection. At Cameron Elementary, inspectors found a mice-dropping infestation in the main kitchen with more than 600 scattered droppings. Here at Hirsch Metro High School, mice got into some nachos and several students actually got sick eating rodent droppings.
A hot topic today is the labeling of genetically modified foods. Some groups, like the American Academy of Pediatrics, said they have no reason to believe that organic foods are any better than GMOs, even though the AAP recognizes that organic foods have less pesticides. No on 37, a Monsanto-funded group against the labeling of GMOs, stated that new labels would cost California consumers up to $400 a year, as if food companies don't regularly change their labels for every major sporting event and blockbuster movie. Many of these food containers also contain BPA.
Canada became the first country in 2010 to ban the use of BPA in just some products, and Europe soon adopted many of these bans. However, in the U.S., the Food and Drug Administration has been much more reluctant to admit the dangers.
And if you're wondering where the USDA is in all of this, they're busy force-feeding GMOs to little Chinese children without their parents' consent. So as you can see, from the White House to Chicago Public Schools to the USDA, everybody wants to tell you what you can put into your body. Land of the free, home of the brave, but apparently not in the lunchroom. I'm Jakari Jackson for the InfoWars Nightly News.
Thank you, Jakari, for that incredible report. Definitely an issue to keep our eye on. We turn now to the quote of the day. It is from H.L. Mencken. Every election is a sort of advance auction sale of stolen goods. Definitely some words to think about. I want to remind you, you could support us at prisonplanet.tv. You could get a membership, share it with up to five people, tune into all our live broadcasts, all our archives, our special reports, you name it. It's an incredible online tool, but we're not limited to just online because we have the InfoWars magazine. It's a physical print subscription. You can also get it in the electronic format, but these paper versions are absolutely incredible. You could buy a subscription. You can donate it to people, police stations, libraries, friends you know, family members, and you get 12 great chances to wake someone up every month. And while supplies last, we'll also send you the back issues so you can get 13, maybe even more magazines with that subscription. I was in a restaurant just yesterday and saw people picking up the Secret Life of Zombies issue. They were talking about it, laughing about it, and then, of course, they opened it to read the glossy magazine, all the beautiful artwork, and many fine sponsors as well, but a lot of powerful information in here help wake people up to the zombification of TV, to the takeover in our media, and everything else covered in this magazine. Again, you can get a subscription, 12 issues plus one, 13 issues, chance after chance to wake someone up, try to reach a zombie and convert them to the InfoWar, or you can buy them in bulk at cost, save them and hand them out physically to people you know. And again, this is how we're going to wake up people inside the system who don't know what's going on, but who need to be woken up. Now we're going to be back. That's all for the news portion, but Alex is interviewing Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaefer on the other side about the latest information on the Benghazi situation, the death of the ambassador, the fact that they were watching it live inside the White House. We'll be back after this, the InfoWars Nightly News.
Every 4 years, the United States of America hears the drumbeat of billions.
Every 4 years, the United States of America hears the drumbeat of billions of campaign dollar attack ads, meaningless debates with empty analysis, and poll after poll after poll. This can only mean one thing. It's time to pick our globalist puppet leader.
We're going to be left with a choice of a lesser of two evils.
They continue to vote for these Democrats and Republicans, the people that are wrecking our country, and yet they still vote for them.
Unlike North Korea and China, we Americans have the illusion of choice this November 6th. Will it be globalist puppet A or puppet B?
I think that a lot of votes are going to be stolen by the millions. In fact, I can give you a pretty solid number, about at least 5.9 million, because I'm a statistician. I work from the government's raw data. About 5.9 million votes are going to go kapoof.
I don't know how you could possibly have voter fraud when your son owns the voting machines.
Tune in to the live video streams at Prison Planet TV or Infowars.com from 5 p.m. to midnight Central. Alex Jones will be live with some great special guests to cover what is in store for our country as we march into the arms of the New World Order. And tune in Wednesday for more live, free stream election fallout coverage from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central. Coke or Pepsi, Romney or Obama? The choice is not up to you. So join us as we talk about the real issues facing our country. Guests will include Gerald Celente, Wayne Madsen, Max Kaiser, Paul Craig Roberts, Lou Rockwell, Nomi Prinz, and Webster Tarpley. We will have live sheeple updates from polling centers and political parties around Austin. Which management team from Slavery Incorporated will run the country into oblivion for the next 4 years? Tune in to Infowars.com or Prison Planet TV this Tuesday, November 6th and Wednesday, November 7th as another meaningless pageant is played out. The streams will be free. So send the link below to all your friends on Facebook and Twitter.
As part of our live election coverage this Tuesday and Wednesday, we're not going to just give you rigged vote totals. We're going to give you the chance to vote early and vote often in our multiple polls. We want to know what you think of this election, what matters to you, and what you think will happen now. And if you have any questions you'd like to see included in a poll, you can email those to davidk@infowars.com or tweet them using the hashtag PuppetPrez. And don't forget, the election coverage is not only live, but it's free on PrisonPlanet.tv.
While we fight to retain our liberty, while we fight to expose globalism, we have to realize we're talking about a very powerful combination of power.
Renowned author and expert Joel Scalzo breaks down the globalist plan to shut down America and stage a new world war.
In one day, America will go from day to night. And if you haven't prepared in advance, there's not enough time to prepare in 24 hours, even if you saw it that early.
Coming to the InfoWar in November is our new documentary film presentation.
Strategic relocation is a systematic way to think strategically in the future about how do I safeguard.
Joel Scalzo, Strategic Relocation.
The freeways are going to be crowded. They're going to run out of gasoline. They're going to run out of food. And then they're going to start to go north and south of those freeways.
Joel Scalzo is renowned as one of the world's foremost experts in strategic relocation and the securing of your home.
We talk about natural disasters, the health environment. We talk about pollution, the water quality. My personal experience about being in every one of these states.
Government is digging in for the organized, incremental collapse of society and world war.
The U.S. isn't building huge underground bases and bunkers because of some terrorist threat. They know that a massive nuclear attack is coming. They want that attack to come. Most people won't even be ready and won't be able to get out of town when any of these nuclear weapons fall, because there'll be absolute panic.
There is no preparedness without strategy.
What I tell people is that you do have time. Prepare wisely in advance.
This Christmas, give the gift of preparedness. Strategic Relocation, the film, with Joel Scalzo and Alex Jones.
And we are back on this Monday, November 5th, 2012 edition. And the interview that we're about to conduct is one of the most damning and shocking things that I've probably ever covered. Because when you look at the information, it's all there hiding in plain view if we have the will to actually look at it and admit what it is to ourselves. I saw a clip a few days ago from Fox News with Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaefer, a intelligence officer, Bronze Star winner, the guy that ran Stratus Ivy and other programs who could have killed bin Laden now 11 years ago but was ordered to stand down. I saw him breaking down the facts of what happened in Benghazi, and being a news person, I follow this every day. I knew everything he was saying was very accurate and admitted, and that the president had clearly lied when he said for 5 hours that they didn't know this was an attack and that it was a group of protesters. And now the facts are coming out, and we know they lied. The question is, what did they lie about? Why would they endanger their entire administration to let this Al-Qaeda-affiliated group engage in this long firefight and protracted action and then kill him? And then expanding from that, what were they trying to cover up? So Lieutenant Colonel Schaefer joins us. He's also the best-selling author of a book dealing with his missions in Afghanistan. We'll talk about that because it ties into some of this at the end of the interview. But, Colonel, if we can, because on Fox News, obviously you had the host and the other colonel on there with you interjecting their points, but basically agreeing with you, start from the beginning, flesh this out of what we now know really happened, and then the rest of the story, Colonel Schaefer.
Well, let me begin with the point that I think, as you point out, so much of this, Alec, is hiding in plain sight. And one of the most obvious things, which the mainstream media continues to fail to recognize, is that this was a protracted battle. We're talking about starting in the evening, say between 7 and 8, and lasting until the next morning. Now, one notable thing, just to frame this whole thing, I think this is where we're going to go with this, from what we were talking about, is that during this entire time, no one knew the ambassador was dead. And this is notable by the fact that one of the things you'd think they'd want to do is find him by the fact you would not want to have a hostage situation similar to the one that hobbled Jimmy Carter during his reelection campaign back in 1980. And think about this. If Ambassador Stevens was taken hostage, every day there would be a reminder of the failed policy. So therefore, you have to wonder, why didn't the recovery of the ambassador take front and center from the moment that he went missing? And it's notable that there's been no mention of that by any outlet, how they wanted to go after him. So with that said, it's very clear now that within the context of the event of 11 September of this year, of 2012, it was very clear from the moment, about 4 p.m. after Ambassador Stevens met with his last visitor of the day, which apparently was the Turkish representative. That's notable. Turkey is partnering with us right now in a covert action to help do two things. Increasing level of intelligence we're aware of by using the Turkish intelligence assets on the ground in Syria, and by actually working with us to quote-unquote arm the friendly rebels, whoever they are. And I think that's notable by the fact Ambassador Stevens met with this Turkish representative right before the firefight. The next thing we know, and let me be very clear about this, there was no demonstration. It was quiet, all quiet on the Western Front, if you will, there in Benghazi. Nothing was going on. And over the next few hours, it became very clear by the admissions of some of the SEALs even, that there were things going on which were peculiar, their own guards taking photographs of their positions. This is a huge clue to the fact that it appears now that Ansar al-Sharia penetrated badly, significantly, the 17th Brigade that was supporting supposedly an allied to the CIA and Department of State, an allied militia, which is supposed to be providing essentially some level of support and security outside the embassy. Well, it's very clear now that this group was very badly infiltrated by Ansar al-Sharia and an al-Qaeda affiliate. And so that's where the fun begins, so to speak. You had wave after wave of attacks starting at about 8 p.m. Going until the next morning. The culmination of which was the mortar attack, which ended up killing the two Navy SEALs, Doherty and woods. So during that entire time, Alex, is what now becomes one of the mystery points. Who did what? When were they notified? And what was supposed to happen once the notification was given? And I think one of the things that's been very clear to me based on my sources is that the president was notified by something called a critical incident report, which is handled through CIA classified channels. That report, I'm told, and this has been verified pretty much by Tom Vitor, the spokesman for the National Security Council, that they did receive notification on a timely basis about the attack. Well, then, if that's the case, then who did what? What was the response? What should have been the response is something that is really done by the terrorism group that the president should have assembled.
Now, let's walk through this, though, because this is really important, expanding on it. I mean, obviously, you've got a bunch of embassies being attacked, four of them in the days before. You've got an event. First, they said 5 hours. Now they say seven or eight. The point is, it's over 5 hours.
Right.
This is going on, and then they're saying it's a protest. Break down, because you've worked in these levels. You've seen these drone feeds. What happens once this report comes in?
Well, first off, you can tell by the drone feed, Alex, it's not a freaking protest. I mean, people with protests show up, they gather around, they throw things, they're a big bunch. This was not a big bunch of people standing around in the street. These were armed fighters trying to breach the security of the compound. Again, it's a very different thing. Yes, granted, in Egypt next door, there was a breaching of the compound, but there was a very clear gathering of individuals with grievances. And let me be very clear here, it's very rare for a group of rioters to gather in hours of darkness. It kind of prevents the whole idea of seeing the protest. So that was right off the bat peculiar. And yeah, these feeds are being seen globally. Everybody who has a top secret SCI feed, this is the highest level of system, well, can dial into this. And when an attack is ongoing, Alex, everybody tunes in. In this case, a DOD drone was loaned to CIA, put under CIA control, and from that point on, I estimate probably about 10 o'clock, everything was being seen in real time. So everybody here, and keep in mind that 10 o'clock there is about sometime in the about 8 hours later here. So we're talking about essentially all of this happening during the beginning of and throughout the process of a business day.
So it's 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon. Obviously, everybody at the Pentagon, you name it, their eyes on the ambassador being attacked.
Right. So there's no doubt. Everybody is standing, too, because they're at their workstations. There's no calling people in from a slumber. So during this time, then, everybody's notified. And then what's supposed to happen is you bring the people together who have already planned contingencies. And Alex, let me be very clear for your audience here. Well, I don't know why I have to say this, but people seem to forget. This was a 9/11 anniversary. You should have had every resource in the region standing to ready to go. That includes special operations folks. That includes aircraft of all flavor that we have, logistical, fighters, anything else that may be called upon. And of course, break. There was already riots going on in other places. So how could you not miss the clues, clue after clue after clue, that something may happen, therefore you must be ready. So what logically should have happened is that you use those ready resources and begin planning. You try to figure out, what do I have available to me to react to this situation? And this is where it all gets very murky. And my sources do tell me that President Obama was called in. He admitted that he got briefed on it. Further, my guys have told me he was called in and watched the video for a while, even. And during this time, supposedly, this group of national security experts includes Tom Donilon, his national security advisor, John Brennan, the terrorism advisor, and Deputy National Security Advisor Dennis McDonough, all gathered and supposedly put their brains together and started determining what they should do. And it just so happened that Leon Panetta was there, apparently, from meeting on some other things. So everybody was there. The whole brain trust was there. The question now becomes, Alex, what did they do or not do? And this, again, is the mystery, because this was a curtailed time period that's measurable. This was something that happened over hours. This was not something that happened in 10 minutes and you were done. You actually had major decision points all throughout the evening that related to things going on the ground.
And you've got right across the Mediterranean, 20 minutes away, you've got jets, you've got special forces all over the area, obviously even in country.
Right.
And clearly from your sources, I mean, expand on this, we're talking about a presidential stand down over at least 5 hours.
This is where it gets murky, because the president says he issued an order saying go do what's necessary to protect our people and protect our territory. So Bing West, God bless him, has done an editorial. I support Bing on this, calling for the president to cough up the order. I think it's very simple. If he said he ordered it, then cough up the order.
But if he would have ordered it, you would have had drones, C-130s with Gatling guns and howitzers. I mean, they would have been there in, what, 20, 30 minutes?
It's a bit longer than that. We're talking about 450 miles for some of these places, so we're talking about still a very short amount of time. I mean, these things can move within an hour about 400 miles. So it's not significant that 400 miles would have slowed these people down that much. And frankly, helicopters, some special operations helicopters can chew up that space pretty quick. They can get mid-air refuel. So there's any number of options. I did an editorial on this just so your audience can actually kind of measure this and compare it. I did an editorial on FoxNews.com. It talks about what President Reagan did when he was confronted with the fact that students on the island of Grenada in 1983 may become captured. So in that editorial, I don't want to waste our time here, but I walk through how President Reagan did his decision-making and what confined time spaces they had there. And once you read that, you recognize that if Reagan can do it in 83 in 6 hours to invade a country, surely we could have done a lot more within the space of time we had with this. So
you've got an island thousands of miles away and he could do it very quickly. So expanding, What's the bottom line with Obama and all of his surrogates the next day saying these were protesters? We know that's a lie.
Right.
We know that this was an arms cache facility. We know there were Turkey that you alluded to. Break that down with arms shipments to the Wahhabists and others that are attacking Assad. So Colonel, break all this down for us, what we're really dealing with here.
Well, my theory is, based on the information I have, and again, we're hoping more people will break ranks and say more, is some of your audience may remember something called Camp Chapman. Camp Chapman was a CIA operation back in 2009, December 2009, that went very bad. Basically, Al-Qaeda ate our lunch. This was a Jordanian doctor who they thought had been doubled. They thought he was working for us. He was still working for Al-Qaeda. And he conveniently came in with a body bomb and killed, according to CIA, their best bin Laden analysts. So I think what we're looking at here, Alex, is something similar. I do believe Ansar al-Sharia got wind of what we were doing there in the compound, in the consulate. And frankly, they were able to penetrate to the level of where they were effective in going in and attacking our folks. And let me be very clear what this means to me and what I think is going on. There was about 20,000 surface-to-air missiles, SA-7, SA-22s, according to my CIA sources, on the ground in Libya after we so-called liberated the Libyan people. Well, only about 5,000 of those have been recovered. Some of those, I believe, have shown up in Syria with the rebels. So with that said, your appearance here, and this is where I think certain Democrats have already kind of alluded to the fact there's something deeper here they don't want to get into. It's all about essentially a Fast and Furious gone wrong in the Middle East. I think what they were doing here was a buyback program, trying to get these weapons out of the hands of the folks in Libya, and then trying to give them to the Turks, who then were going to pass them over to the Syrians. And so I think what we see here is a Middle Eastern version of Fast and Furious. And I think what we have to sort through here, which is going to be the difficult piece, is who within the administration knew that, who maybe didn't like the way things were playing out. Maybe Ambassador Stephen found out things he didn't like about what was going on. I know theoretically my friends at CIA have told me he was not aware fully of the details of the covert action relating to this buyback or movement of arms. And the question becomes, who did what and why did they do it within the context of that time frame? Now, the next morning, clearly, there was zero evidence, no credible intelligence that there was ever a protest. Therefore, someone had to come up with a cover story or concoct a story which out of whole cloth. And it's been very interesting listening to President Obama speak about this, because according to him, within his Rose Garden comments, he said it was terrorism. Yet in a 60 Minutes interview he did just minutes later after that, he says now, and this was released yesterday by 60 Minutes, CBS, saying, well, we don't know if it's a terrorist act. And then, of course, he's come back and again said, of course, I thought it was a terrorist act. There's been back and forth. So this, to me, should send up all sorts of flares to the mainstream media to start asking really hard questions. Why on earth would you lie? And let me be very clear about this. Why on earth would you lie about a video being the reason for a full-on al-Qaeda attack on an ambassador and one of your key overseas missions where you've actually invested the great time of sweat equity trying to free a people. Why would you not tell the truth about what happened? And the whole premise of this video being the reason for this is taken on a whole insane life of its own. And so the next day, the very next day after this, you know, it's the 12th of September of this year, someone had to come up with an idea of what they were going to say. They've attributed this to Alex, a talking points memo put together by one each Lieutenant General retired Jim Clapper, who's the DNI, Director of National Intelligence. And supposedly, Clapper gave this memo with the full blessing of the Director of CIA, General Petraeus, to members of the president's team. And it was from this point that everybody went out to brief the Congress, the media, and the American people. Well, it's adequately, I think, been proven to me that whatever was in that memo was a lie. So one of the things we should do is demand a copy of the memo. Just put it out there. Much like the vaunted authorization document the president should have put together to authorize military force, and let me be very clear on this, only the president can authorize in times of extremis the crossing of international borders without other countries approving it. He had to personally approve that. So the same thing here. Someone had to personally, at a very high level, approve this talking points memo, which outlined the quote-unquote video theory of the reason for the attack. So there's two key pieces of paper here, Alex. I would estimate probably should be no more than one page each that are really key and critical to resolving the responsibility, both the moments of the attack as well as the outcome of somehow blaming, coming up with the conclusion that the video was to blame for
Sure, it's a way to blame the First Amendment, and they can have the mullahs come out and call for restricting our free speech. Condensing this down for laymen out there and going over this, and what we talked about right before we went on air, I mean, I said to you, I said, Colonel, you know, this looks like arms to Syria. We know that's going on. We know they buy, you know, nukes back from the Russians, you know, buyback. Right. But that's giving it from one al-Qaeda or radical Wahhabist jihadi group to another. I mean, that's where they're going. It's that conduit out of Libya into Syria. No fan of Assad, but my God, this is putting even worse people in. So we got this whole proxy war going on. And I said, from my sources, both media but also in government, one in and around the Pentagon, that, and I heard this weeks ago and didn't go on air with it just because it would have sounded too wild at that time, that basically this was a hit on Stevens because he had gotten cold feet and was getting upset about stockpiling all these you know, different types of missiles there at the facility. What is your bottom line on that and what you said to me off air, and what it says about the White House that they would have the Nixon moment? If they got away with Fast and Furious, even if Obama gets reelected tomorrow, there's no way they're getting away with this, because now the SEAL families are coming out, can't kill them. Obama's been caught lying. We know there's the video feed now. I mean, we know it went on for way more than 5 hours. We know the stand down took place. So repeat to me, if you can, what you said, and then what this signifies in the larger policy.
Right. Well, let me just echo, I agree with you. There's a British article today, I don't know if you saw, the British are now saying some of the weapons that they left behind, they stored with us, are now missing too. So it's very clear, whatever was stored in those facilities are gone. So I think that's a big point. Right here, Alex, I think it's where there's one of two things. And this is why I opened our interview with pointing out that during that entire period, the White House wasn't seeming to be all that concerned about the presence of where is Ambassador Stevens? Now think about that. He's a sitting ambassador potentially going missing right before a major election. The last thing you want is him captured. So how is it that that's not the first thing on your mind, is his recovery?
It could be the Iranian hostage crisis all over again.
Right. So how is it that the president wasn't the first thing out of his mouth when he was asked about this? Well, our first priority was recovery of Ambassador Stevens because we wanted to prevent a hostage crisis.
Obama would have looked great if he sent in helicopters first bombed with jets and then helicopters to kill al-Qaeda. That would have been his reelection right there.
I think showing strength would have been a great indicator of resolve. And that's where it all kind of breaks down. So I don't know What happened to Ambassador Stevens? There are some theories out there that relating to him, and one of those is that maybe he got set up. Now, I will say this. To me, this does have the hallmarks of a setup. I don't know how to say that other than CIA got set up by Al-Qaeda in 2009. They thought they were dealing with so-called friendly elements of Al-Qaeda. And, Alex, I think part of the deal here is certain people within our government thought they could make friends with Al-Qaeda. They thought that Al-Qaeda, for purposes of Syria, may be an adequate partner, if you will, to do some of the dirty work. And I think that's part of the real thing that they're worried about coming out here.
And now Al-Qaeda has got, undoubtedly, as you said, over 10,000 missiles. They can hold the entire West hostage.
Right. And I think that's the huge issue here. And this is something, Alex, let me remind your audience that this was talked about 18 months ago when we first started down this path.
When you were on my show, you said they're going to get all the high-tech weapons from Gaddafi.
Right. And this was one of the concerns we talked about. I talked about with you. I talked about with the mainstream media that we had to be careful how we destabilized. As much as Gaddafi was bad, the outcome of basically balkanization of Libya would be far worse, and that's where we're at. So I think there's multiple reasons here. The White House really didn't want to talk about this going wrong. And I think in many ways, no matter what's going to come out, and I think there's going to be a lot more coming out, no matter how you cut it, they did not want to have a major discussion of things going wrong and what they showed up to be one of their major foreign policy victories. And I think it's very clear here that predicted this would happen.
Sure. So here it is. Either they hung him out to dry because they didn't want to go and kill their own Al-Qaeda people, which they've now admitted had been hired as the security for them.
Right.
They don't want to show that they're working with Al-Qaeda. Or B, it's worse. The ambassador wasn't going to play ball, so he had to be gotten rid of. Or, again, their own Al-Qaeda people double-crossed him, maybe even got the money probably, and then double-snatched the missiles again.
I think that your last option is there may be more to it, but I think that's the most realistic option at this point. It's very clear that Al-Qaeda got through the wire. Through the wire. They got the stuff back. It's gone. And we were arming and paying people to so-called friends that we weren't vetting. And let me be very clear. This is one of the things I've said on Fox News. I said this within 24 hours of the event. I'm told by my sources that we weren't doing those hard things we're supposed to be doing as intelligence officers to verify and vet, to vet someone to make sure they're actually working for you. We didn't do those hard things. We didn't look at where they lived. We didn't look at what they were doing. We didn't work to verify who they said they were and the fact that they were loyal to us. And by the fact that these, and part of it was, Alex, the officers were told, don't worry about it. Don't do those things because we want to be friendly with them. And this is all about trying to show a new face of the United States and be all friendly and not do those traditional things, which I would have done as an intelligence officer to make sure that the guy sitting across from me actually is going to do what I asked him to do.
Well,
and he won't come
back. That's why you're so uniquely, perfect to be able to break this down. Talk about your book. Talk about the website, because for many years you actually did these type of things. You could have killed bin Laden. That's now been declassified years after you were first telling Congress about it. And so it just continues where the system needs Al-Qaeda. And then I want to ask you this. Where do you predict it's all going? Because you've had amazing, over-the-horizon predictions, knowing Al-Qaeda, knowing the Wahhabists, knowing all these angles, how the intelligence, community uses them, and then they turn against them, this blowback thing. Where is it going to go, putting them in charge of Libya and Syria down the road?
Well, not good. I think you're inherently giving folks who want to destabilize order the ability to create chaos. And I don't think that's in our interest. I think we need to take Syria, and as bad as the Syrian regime is, we want to get rid of the Syrian regime, but you don't want to get rid of the Syrian government. The government is what holds that country together. Trust me, if we do to Syria what we did to Libya, it'll be far worse. With that said, taking a step back to Operation Dark Heart, my book, it's notable that it's in the book. We actually brought a warlord in. We vetted him. We did all the things necessary to make sure he was working for us. And, oh, by the way, Alex, he didn't blow us up. I'm sorry. I don't mean to joke about it, but it's very clear there's things you can do to do this sort of thing successfully in that environment. They're not easy. It takes time. You've got to be doubly sure because the obvious consequence is the death of you or the people you're trying to support.
How do you vet them?
Well, I don't want to get into it because it's classified, but I can say there's a regimen of things you need to go through. There's ways of checking on people. There's ways of testing them. Basically, it's much like you would do a snitch on a police department. You want to figure out ways to make sure that they're telling you the right gouge about whatever you're dealing with. There's ways of doing it, trust me. But if you take a shortcut and don't do those things, then you are doubling down on your own disaster. And I think that's what we've seen here time and time again. And I was told by my guys, my contacts, we weren't doing those hard things. We weren't doing the vetting to the level necessary to protect our own folks. So Operation Dark Arts, a good read. You can go through as much as DOD will let me talk about it. By the way, we had a First Amendment victory on that, Alex. This is the first time we're talking about this anywhere. The Department of Defense lost in court. They tried to dismiss my First Amendment suit over standing. They said I didn't have standing to bring suit because I didn't follow proper procedure. Well, we won. The court said I have standing, and now we can proceed with our First Amendment suit against DOD for violation of my First Amendments. That's coming soon.
Wow, so that's breaking news there. I just noticed on your site something new. What's the private war there on the site?
One of the things your readers can go to my site, OperationDarkHeart.com. Peter Lance, investigative journalist, did a detailed investigation of the book, and he basically put everything back in his article, what they took out of the book. Peter's a brilliant writer. You probably had him on for Triple Cross.
Yes.
And he did a brilliant job of researching. I don't know how he found out some of the information, but everything the Pentagon wanted out of the book, he put back in the article, The Private War of Anthony Schaefer. Your readers can read it, and the listeners can read it. And it talks about, like you mentioned, some of the things we could and should have done to Al-Qaeda and some of these other guys before 9/11.
Okay. In closing here, and we appreciate your time, Colonel Schaefer, looking at this, there's got to be a method to what the State Department and the Obama people are doing. But you put the Muslim Brotherhood in. You put Al-Qaeda. That's the main group now in Libya. Right. Al-Qaeda, they even admit now, is the main core force. Some estimates are as much as half. The CFR a couple months ago said, quote, we need Al-Qaeda. But then I'm told I've got to give my rights up, have the TSA, you know, molest my family, grab on me. I've got to see checkpoints on the highway because of Al-Qaeda. But then I get the internal government training manuals. It's all about gun owners, returning veterans. You know, we're the threat. Clearly, they're using the Al-Qaeda threat to set up a police state, power grab here domestically, you know, mission creep. And then overseas, how does government think it's going to get away with putting Al-Qaeda in charge of all these countries? I mean, the blowback from this, I mean, people aren't stupid now. It's not like stuff happens in the 80s and then 20 years later something happens. We're talking about in the same year we're having blowback, right. And obviously it's going to get a lot worse. So how does what's happening in the power structure? Because from my view, we've never had a perfect power structure, but they're getting so sloppy, so reckless, so delusional.
Well, two things I'll say. First, we've got to get the NDAA done. I mean, the idea that President Obama or any president really can assassinate U.S. citizens or indefinitely detain anybody because they're a threat because he says so. Are you kidding me? We've got to fix that. And this goes back to the larger issue, which you're pointing out. We have to look at threat for what it really is. And everything we do, Alex, has to be based on the real threat. We have to do a survey, figure out globally a strategy that's based on threat. So much of what we're seeing right now is whimsy. And let me be very clear for your audience here. The TSA isn't making anybody safe. It's great theater, but it ain't making you any safer when they go through these things. I've been through several times, and I'm fascinated every time of how they either miss things or, you know, one time I was wearing a shirt and somehow they were convinced my breasts were somehow missiles or something. I mean, literally that insane, because they had to do, after I did one of these body searches, they had to go back and physically touch me. Are you kidding me? So there's real problems here with both the domestic policy of what they're doing to quote unquote make us safe and the larger threat, which is developing overseas. There is a disconnect. We don't have a government with a clear policy and vision of what we need to worry about. You have disconnected elements which are functioning, in my judgment, very partisan way based on politics rather than...
I was about to say, you've got all these agencies power grabbing, and right. Why shouldn't DHS get a bunch of toilet attendants, throw them in uniforms, and declare the entire Bill of Rights is gone and they're now little commandos? I mean, this is classical tyranny.
And that's what we have to be aware of. We need to look at what the real threats are, both globally and domestically, and then base our strategy for dealing with it, and then fund the strategy. Right now, we're doing it completely backwards. We're funding whatever anybody wants, and this is partly Congress's job. I fought Congress big time, and I'm trying to work with certain members of Congress, like Representative Walter Jones and others, who really are looking at how we need to force the federal government take a big step back, look at real threats, and not simply fund things for funding's sake and try to establish a strategy, both domestically and globally, that reflects what the real threats are rather than what they're doing right now.
What do you make of the 10,000-plus missing missiles? I mean, describe some of these missiles, because I'm told there's some heat-seeking, radar-guided, unguided. I mean, anybody now with these, not just in the U.S., if they can get them here, but in Europe and other areas, I mean, they can shoot down airliners. Now we're talking about real terrorism, and then I'm going to be told I've got to give up more rights because our government let al-Qaeda into Libya? I mean, I guess that's part of the plan. They think that we're so dumb, they can create all this chaos and then use it to take our freedoms.
Well, this is what baffles me, because as you point out, Alex, we talked about this 18 months ago and the inevitable downside of allowing Libya to fail. I mean, this is where it doesn't make sense to me unless, you know, there's something else going on here that I don't know. With that said, the surface-to-air missiles we're talking about, the SA-7s and SA-22s, essentially are shoulder-launched missiles. They're, most of them that I'm aware of are essentially optical. They actually are heat-seeking. They track heat. And so when you fire it off, it actually goes to a heat source and tries to blow up in or near it. And what we're seeing right now is obviously most civilian aircraft do not have any countermeasures. These things can be defeated. That's why when you see our fighters doing a run low to the ground, they pull up and you see all these flares popping off. Well, those flares are designed for the heat seekers to track the flares, not the aircraft. So this is why you see that. Civilian airliners don't have that option. So obviously this is a huge threat more to civilian aviation than to military aviation. Military aviation, much more difficult to actually get one of these things in close.
Sure, somebody just sits at the end of the airport, a plane takes off, and it's like shooting fish in a barrel.
Right, exactly. And so this is why it's so insidious and so real. And so we have to be aware of where these weapons are going and where they're going to go. I never was a proponent, as you know, for boots on the ground. But I did say once we, you know, destabilized and allowed the Libyan government to fail.
You said once you do it, you own it.
Once you break it, you got to fix it. And we broke it big time. And what I'm worried about, Alex, and I think you and your audience is that if something goes wrong, these weapons, these surface-to-air missiles get out of Libya, they can go to Europe or they can come here. But no matter how you cut it, we don't have civilian airliners, commercial airliners, adequately prepared to be able to jink and jag and fire off flares to avoid these things. And it's inevitably going to result in a loss of life.
Well, look, you throw out Gaddafi, who's working with the West for 7 years. You put the worst miscreants of the Middle East in charge. When airliners get shot down, I think it's safe to say with 15,000 of these missiles missing or whatever, there's going to be some problems. I hope the Secretary General of NATO and Obama and all these other people, Sarkozy, well, he's already facing jail. I hope they all get thrown in jail because they are the ones that put the gun in al-Qaeda's hand. Can you close on that? Any other points, Colonel, that you haven't been able to add here?
Well, no, I think this is one of those things, and let me point out to your audience, I was actually a whistleblower against the Bush White House, so I'd like to believe that your audience understands I'm all about accountability. I think this is all about trying to protect the American people no matter who's in charge, and frankly, we, I think, have done some things with international leaders, Sarkozy and others, which were not in our best interest, and frankly, not in the best interest of the Libyan people. The Libyan people are the ones now suffering through this, and I don't believe the leveling of Misrata really helped anybody, and frankly, you know, we made some huge mistakes. So now we have to account for those mistakes and own up to them. Just say mistakes were made and let's fix them. Otherwise, if we don't fix them, we don't track down those weapons of, you know, the surface-to-air missiles and other things, we, in some way, will pay the price for that.
Well, I mean, isn't it a criminal act to go call it a peace mission and bomb Libya for 6 months or whatever it was and then put al-Qaeda in?
I still believe that that whole incursion, the so-called quick kinetic strike, was illegal. It was not constitutional. Everybody I've talked to on the Hill, and I'm very good friends with Bruce Fine, a constitutional lawyer. He has been very clear on this. There was no constitutional basis. There was no appropriation of money. There was no legal determination for them to do it. So it was a completely illegal act. And I wish people would recognize that this was a complete bypass of the Constitution.
Colonel Shaver, thank you so much for the time. I've got to throw one more in here because I know you look at this all the time. You talk to constitutional experts like Bruce Fine, who's also a friend of this show. Looking at all this, looking at what Obama says he's going to do versus Romney, I know that you're nonpartisan and just try to have accountability and defend the republic. What is your gut on what Obama will do if he gets back in briefly versus Romney? Because Obama, as you know, has said NATO is who they go to for military action, the New World Army. They don't go to Congress. And Congress, other than Congressman Jones that you mentioned earlier, introducing bills to impeach if that continues. Nothing's being done. So, I mean, we're really moving down that road towards global governance.
Well, that's what really is bothersome. And again, the folks I work with, both on the Hill and, you know, with Bruce Fein and company, recognize the slippery slope of where we're going with this. Let's just use Libya as a metaphor. Libya, any military action should have been approved by Congress. Article 5 of the Constitution, I think, is very, very clear on this. I think it's Article 5. I don't know my Constitution as well as I should. But we should be actually stipulating what we can and cannot do based on Congress. Only Congress can declare war. And to me, any extension of military action beyond response, emergency response to being attacked, should fall to Congress. And this is something every American should recognize. There's a reason why the founders wrote it this way, so it would not be easy for the executive to run off and engage in war. And let's remember, George Washington, our founding father, recognized the folly of this and actually supported the idea of having restraint. He personally could have been king. Think about that, Alex. He could have been king, yet he said, no, we've got to find a way to sustain our government in such a way there's checks and balances. And right now, the checks and balances are completely out of whack. This is something I've been working with my, you know, with Congress on. They've got to reestablish themselves as something more than the invertebrate branch, as Bruce Fein always calls them.
Colonel Shaver, thank you so much for the time. Undoubtedly, this is going to be very, very interesting road ahead. And I just appreciate you having the courage to go on television, not just here, but on Fox News and other places, and tell the truth. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Alex.
Amazing. All right, folks. We're going to go ahead and pull up the section of the Constitution itself here. And that is Article 1, Section 8, Powers of the Congress. And it goes over that they have the power of the purse, the power of tribunals, to declare war. So there it is in Article 1, Section 8. To declare war, grant letters of marque and reprisal, and make rules concerning captures on land and water, to raise and support armies, but no appropriation of money to that use shall be for longer term than 2 years. To provide and maintain a navy. To make rules for the government, regulation of the land and naval forces, to provide for calling forth of the militia, to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions, the provision of organizing, arming, and disciplining of the militia. It just goes on and on. So there you go, Article 1, Section 8. And Article 1, Section 9, I know, says the president will not serve as an officer in any foreign government or system, as Obama did under Article 1, Section 9, becoming the head of the U.N. Security Council for a while. They are just breaking the Bill of Rights and Constitution in front of everyone on purpose. Powerful interview with Shaffer. You know, on Fox News, it was 3 minutes boiled down. Off air, he said, yeah, this has all the hallmarks of a hit. I forgot to get to this one point. So let's document, Cam, this. I knew I was forgetting to ask him about something. This is being reported by the Washington Times. Is a general losing his job over Benghazi? A general that tried to refuse to not stand down? That's in the Washington Times. An AFRICOM general, Carter Ham, unconfirmed reports ask, was Ham relieved of command minutes before ordering Benghazi rescue? And he needs to speak out. He needs to talk about that. Why did they want that guy to go bye-bye? This is a big deal. This is a very, very big deal. So that backs up basically what Colonel Shaffer was talking about there. Back tomorrow, I'm going to be on the radio, 12 noon to 3 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Central. And then we're going to be back from 5 to midnight or even later with our big team of reporters and the great crew behind the scenes, like Marcos Morales in there tirelessly running the boards, and Wes in there, and, of course, Rob Doom. We're going to have Jakari Jackson and David Knight in here. I'll be in the radio studio, Studio 1. They'll be in Studio 2. Going back and forth with reports, we've got a full list. If you go to InfoWars.com, you'll see we've got a big puppet theater there with Obama and Romney. And we have a link there to the free video feed. You won't just have to be a subscriber tomorrow to see the video production that we're going to have. And we've got a huge list of some of the most informative guests there on the site, like Max Kaiser, Gerald Celente, Webster Tarpley, Dr. Paul Craig Roberts. The list just goes on and on. So you definitely do not want to miss any of that information. Starting back live at 5 p.m. Central, Again, Gerald Celente, Max Kaiser, Wayne Madsen, Paul Craig Roberts, Lou Rockwell, Nomi Prinz, Webster Tarpley, and others. So make sure to tune in and to also tell your friends and family to tune in to the free video links and audio links at InfoWars.com, PrisonPlanet.tv, and PrisonPlanet.com. And in closing, the new glossy magazine, the November issue, is out. It deals with television, the dumbing down, the brainwashing, increases in seizures because of television, and the fact that people are being systematically programmed. You can buy them in groups of 10 up to 100 at cost. They're basically like little color 60-page books with a big color poster on the inside. Or you can get a subscription for yourself and then hand it off to friends and family, or get a gift subscription, and that's 12 of these. When we have back issues, we'll also add those in, so sometimes it'll be more. But 12 issues guaranteed, delivered to the police station's door, the library's door, your church's door, your dad's door, your mom's door, your son's door, your wife's door, your boss's door. You want to educate people. 12 of these, $59.95, half of that's the shipping cost. Shipping is included. Get a yearly subscription right now and support the true alternative media. Great new weapon, InfoWarsStore.com, to subscribe or to buy them in bulk and hand them out to the zombies that are out there. And again, great job to the crew. I want to thank everybody for the job they did. It was good to have Aaron doing the news as well tonight. And I will see you back tomorrow for Marathon Broadcast. Let me see, I'll be 3 hours on the radio. That'll be a video feed as well. Again, you can send that link out to friends and family. And then back from 5 to midnight, that's 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. That's 10 hours at least. We're going to have reporters on the ground, special guests, so much more. That's it for this edition of Teleprompter Free, InfoWars Nightly News. Lord willing, we'll see you back tomorrow. Thanks for all your support.